Well, here we are back with Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, community radio in Cambridge. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and this evening I'd like to attend with you to some aspects of gifts. Well, yes, it's that time of the year when we are bombarded with desperate advertising, playing on our need to give gifts all around our circle of friends and family. But we won't be speaking only about Christmas gifts. There are other gifts, too, claiming our attention this evening under lamplight. Let's look at these first and come back to Christmas gifts a little later. We were talking in class the other night about the Homeric practice of giving gifts to important guests. In the Iliad, the way a hero shows his great glory was by overcoming other heroic men on the field of battle and stripping the adversary's corpse of its armor to hang as a trophy back in the victor's tent. Or if there was no battle going on, these heroes raided other towns and took away precious treasure and women for slaves. These two were trophies, though not quite what we'd call gifts. But in the Odyssey, where the theme is not warfare but wanderings and hospitality, the hero's greatness is measured by the amount of gifts he is given when he pays a visit. In that culture, the host gave the guest the presents, and the guest took them home as trophies to show off his glory. I was telling the students that in my student days, I used to practice this kind of Homeric gift-giving. Whenever someone came to visit me in my rooms, I don't mean anyone dropping by for a few minutes, but a friend visiting the campus from some distance away, I would give that person a gift. Almost always a book. In fact, several years ago, I was at a friend's house, and as I do, I was looking through the bookcase, and I saw a book that interested me. I took it down, and there inside the front cover was an inscription to my friend, labeling the book as a Homeric gift from me. And about 10 years ago, I got in touch with someone I hadn't seen since university days, and the first thing she said was that she'd always remembered me because I'd given her the gift of a book. No one else had ever given her a book. And I remember the book, not just some popular paperback, but a lovely second-hand hardback of a novel containing illustrations from an artist I thought she'd like. But let's return for a moment to those Homeric gifts. There were gifts between mortals, but Greek mythology also gives us examples of gifts from the gods to human beings. Perhaps the most famous concerns the judgment of Paris. You remember that episode. It is the big wedding feast after the marriage of Thetis and Peleus, with all the gods present except Eris, the goddess of discord. Who wants a goddess whose name means strife showing up at the wedding party? Those drunk uncles at the other table are going to be trouble enough. But Eris shows up anyway, just for a moment, but just long enough to cause incalculable damage. She threw down on the table a golden ball labeled Callistite, to the fairest. It was a kind of gift, but only the most beautiful woman in the room could have it. And who was that woman? Well, the actual women wisely backed away and let the goddesses fight it out, and the lesser goddesses also wisely backed away and left the field only to Hera, the queen, Athena, the mighty goddess of wisdom and strategy and craft, and Aphrodite, the goddess of beauty and love. Which one of these was the fairest? They asked Zeus, king of the gods, to be the judge, but he, uncharacteristically wise, backed out of it. Oh no, you're not going to get me involved in this. I can see there's no way to win here. And so he arranged for Paris, a young shepherd on the hills outside of Troy, a royal prince, in fact, though he did not know it yet, he arranged for Paris to be the judge. So Hermes led the three goddesses to Paris, who had to choose. In some versions of the story, written in later, more cynical days, Paris says he cannot properly judge who is the fairest until the goddesses take off their clothes, so the goddesses undress for him. giving Renaissance painters a nice subject to handle. But the important thing here is that in the end, Paris did not judge who was the fairest by any criterion of beauty. He actually judged according to who gave him the best gift, or as we call it, bribe. Hera offered him enormous political power. Athena promised he would never be defeated in battle. But Aphrodite promised him the most beautiful woman in the world. He chose Aphrodite's gift, and the woman was Helen of Sparta, whom Paris soon ran off with to Troy, and thus giving the excuse for the Greeks to show up and start the Trojan War. But the point about the judgment of Paris is that it's seldom spoken about, is that it seemed quite natural that Paris should judge according to the bribes, rather than according to true value. This, we might say, is the abuse of gift-giving, though some cultures would call us naive and tell us that bribery is the only reason for gift-giving. Well, that takes care of Paris giving a gift to the goddess, but what about the gift the goddess gave to Paris? Eventually, the stories tell us, Paris found himself in Sparta, where Helen was married to the king Menelaus. Some stories say that Paris abducted Helen by force. Some stories say that Helen fell in love with Paris and fled willingly. In any case, Aphrodite's gift came with a price. All the Greek heroes had sworn to rescue Helen if anything happened to her, and they set off for Troy. Paris's gift brought disaster. But let's also hope that, sanctioned by the goddess of love, the union of Paris and Helen was bright and joyful, a gift from above. Perhaps they woke each morning singing, "Heaven must have sent you," that classic Motown song from the Elgins. Can we jump from Helen of Troy to Motown? Sure, why not? We're agile, at least agile enough for this kind of jumping. Just watch out for that bass line which hits us right up front. And think of Helen as an American teenager, delighted that Aphrodite sent Paris to her. With Heaven Must Have Sent You. That's not a profound song, but it has an innocent energy that is refreshing, and the tune can haunt us all day. But there were other ways to respond to gifts from the gods. Take Cassandra as an example. The god Apollo spotted her, a royal princess of Troy, in fact Paris's sister, and when Apollo saw her great beauty, and presumably also her talent, he was eager to enlist her as one of his priestesses. He gave her the gift of prophecy, and so Cassandra could accurately see into the future. But as usual, the gift did not come without a price. And when Apollo told her what she was expected to do with him in his bedroom as part of her duties, something like a casting couch, I suppose, Cassandra pulled back. "Oh, no," she said, "that wasn't part of the deal. What do you think I am?" Well, Apollo could not take back his gift of prophecy, but he could taint it. And that's what he did. From that time on, Cassandra would foretell exactly what was going to happen, but no one believed her. "Hey, look out," she cried, "that Trojan horse, it's not a true gift from the Greeks, it's dangerous. Do not bring it inside the walls of Troy." "Sure, Cassandra. Hey, Charlie," said the Trojan engineer, "let's get that thing rolling and open the gates. This baby is moving in. Goodbye, Troy." Or there's another song about gift-giving. Let's go back to the 1963 album The Times They Are A-Changing to hear Dylan's Boots of Spanish Leather. Looks like we've lost the Greek myths now. We're moving on to another subject. Boots of Spanish Leather is structured like a classical ballad. Four-line stanzas containing no description, just dialogue, each stanza going back and forth between the two speakers. She's going to Europe and asks him what gift he would like her to send him. He says he wants nothing back but her. "Just carry yourself back to me unspoiled from across that lonesome ocean." And the only gift she can give him is a sweet kiss on her return. This request is a kind of denial of her whole trip. He wants her, and he wants that trip annihilated. Just be the same as you were before you took that trip. Maybe that's the kind of demands she's running to get away from, but in any case, she writes to him from the ship, they crossed the ocean on ships in those days, to say that she can't say when she's coming back. "It depends on how I'm feeling." Not how he is feeling. She's free of him now. Then he gets the final two stanzas to himself, shutting her off. "In that case," he says, "well, yes, there is something you can send. Yes, I'll take a gift from you, thanks. How about Spanish boots of Spanish leather?" Is that repetition of Spanish a kind of slap in her face? "Just in case you didn't get it the first time, I'll repeat. I want Spanish boots of Spanish leather. Thanks." Well, that's a harsh way of seeing the song. There's a softer way, too. She herself is his gift. She asks him what gift he wants, and he says, "You, baby. Nothing but you the way you are." And when that gift is taken away from him, for whatever reason, then, deflated, he just asks for something ordinary, the kind of thing any tourist might send back from Spain. Some nice leather boots. Boots, presumably, to hit the road with as he walks away from their broken relationship. I've always thought she's probably well away from him, moving on to another part of her life, but we're not really asked to judge in this kind of ballad, just to watch the build-up of emotions, and then that shifting resolution at the end.
"Oh, I'm sailing away, my own true love. I'm sailing away in the morning. Is there something I can send you from across the sea? From the place that I'll be landing. No, there's nothing you can send me, my own true love. There's nothing I'm wishing to be owning. Just to carry yourself back to me unspoiled. I'm across that lonesome ocean. Ah, but I just thought you might want something fine, made of silver or of golden, either from the mountains of Madrid or from the coast of Barcelona. But if I had the stars of the darkest night and the diamonds from the deepest ocean, I'd forsake them all for your sweet kiss. For that's all I'm wishing to be owning. But I might be gone a long old time, and it's only that I'm asking, is there something I can send you to remember me by, to make your time more easy passing? Oh, how can you ask me again? It only brings me sorrow. This same thing I would want today, I would want again tomorrow. Oh, I got a letter on a lonesome day. It was from her ship, it's sailing, saying I don't know when I'll be coming back again. It depends on how I'm feeling. If you, my love, must think that away, I'm sure your mind is a roaming. I'm sure your thoughts are not with me, but with the country to where you're going. So take heed of the western winds. Take heed of the stormy weather. And yes, there's something you can send back to me. Spanish boots are Spanish leather.
Boots of Spanish Leather, Bob Dylan. When did you last hear that song? When did you last attend to it? But now, let's move on to a Latin phrase that comes in handy when we speak about giving gifts. Do ut des. D-O-U-T-D-E-S. It means, I give so that you give. Or more loosely, I give to you so that you will give back to me. This is that kind of bribery we were just looking at with the Judgment of Paris. It's a deal. I give you something in the expectation that you will give me something back. There is a fair balance at the end, we hope, but there seems something a little self-serving here. I don't give because I want to give something nice to you. I give so that I'll get something nice myself. I'm looking after myself and not giving anything away for free. These are the gifts that we say come with a price. But there's another version of this phrase, do et des, E-T rather than U-T, and that makes all the difference. Do et des means I give and may you give. In my giving, I allow you the chance to give also. I set up a generous action and invite you to share it with me. Thus, we are both doing things for love rather than for obligation. Our focus is on the other, not on creating an even score, and not even on the gift itself, only the process of giving the gift. Or sometimes it gets more complicated. Sometimes it's easy to give gifts to others. The hard part is to take gifts from others. There's a surrender at such moments. We stop being active, in control, and take on the passive role of the receiver. Do we dare allow ourselves to be so vulnerable? Remember Dylan's prayer, "May you always do for others and let others do for you." That's from the song Forever Young. And while we're feeling young this evening, under lamplight, here's a delightful French children's song about an exchange of gifts. It is sung by Anne Sylvestre, with the accompaniment of a group of children whom she has obviously charmed and who have obviously charmed her in turn. The song is called Bel Escalier. It takes the form of a children's game, a cycle of questions and answers. As Anne climbs one step of a staircase, the Bel Escalier, after another, asking permission to climb to the next step. At each step, however, she has to give a gift. Que dois-je vous donner? What should I give you? Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez. Give whatever you'd like. It's the same routine at each step, with the variation coming in what she can afford to offer, or what she has on hand that she can give. And for everything she gives, the children give something to her in return. At the first step, she says she has only her handkerchief, but she needs it in case she weeps. That's okay, give your handkerchief, one of the girls tells her. You'll never cry again. At the second step, she says she has only her barrette, her hair grip, and without it, her hair will fall down. That's okay, says another girl. I will do your hair back up for you. Je vous recoifferai. At the third step, she says she has only her sandals, which she needs for walking. Don't worry, says another girl. You can give up your sandals. We've swept the place clean here. At the fourth step, she says she has only 3 marbles. The others have broken. Give your marbles, says another girl. We love to play marbles. At the fifth step, she says she has only her jumping rope, but she loves to skip rope. Give us your rope, says another girl. I'll lend it back to you. At the sixth step, she says she knows a story that she could tell them. Oh, yes, says another girl. Tell us your story. We love to dream. At the seventh step, she says she has only her smile, which she is quite willing to give them. Ah, says another girl, keep your smile. We don't need that. Ici tout le monde est gay. Here everyone is happy. At the final step, she says she has only her heart. After that, she has nothing more. Then give your heart, says another girl, and we will love you well. It won't be too hard to follow along with the French, which is sung slowly and clearly, and is simpler than the more elaborate translation I've just given you.
Bel escalier, puis-je monter?
Mais oui, madame, il faut payer.
À la première marche, que dois-je vous donner?
Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez.
Je n'ai que mon mouchoir, me le faut pour pleurer.
Donnez votre mouchoir, plus jamais pleurerai.
Bel escalier, puis-je monter?
Mais oui, madame, il faut payer.
À la deuxième marche, que dois-je vous donner?
Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez.
Je n'ai que ma barrette, mes cheveux vont tomber.
Donnez votre barrette, je vous recoifferai.
Bel escalier, puis-je monter?
Mais oui, madame, il faut payer.
À la troisième troisième marche, que dois-je vous donner?
Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez.
Je n'ai que mes sandales, me les faut pour marcher.
Donnez donc vos sandales, nous avons balayé.
Bel escalier, puis-je monter?
Mais oui, madame, il faut payer.
À la quatrième marche, que dois-je vous donner?
Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez.
Je n'ai plus que trois billes, les autres sont cassées.
Donnez donc vos trois billes, nous aimons y jouer.
Bel escalier, puis-je monter?
Mais oui, madame, il faut payer.
À la cinquième marche, que dois-je vous donner?
Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez.
Je n'ai plus que ma corde, mais j'aime bien sauter.
Donnez donc votre corde, je vous la prêterai.
Bel escalier, puis-je monter?
Mais oui, madame, il faut payer.
À la sixième marche, que dois-je vous donner?
Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez.
Je connais une histoire, je peux la raconter.
Racontez votre histoire, nous aimons bien rêver.
Escalier, puis-je monter?
Mais oui, madame, il faut payer.
À la septième marche, que dois-je vous donner?
Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez.
Je n'ai que mon sourire, je vous le donnerai.
Gardez votre sourire, ici tout le monde est gai.
Bel escalier, puis-je monter?
Mais oui, madame, il faut payer.
À la dernière marche, que dois-je vous donner?
Donnez, donnez, madame, tout ce que vous voudrez.
Je n'ai plus que mon cœur, après je n'ai plus rien.
Well, that was Anne Sylvestre singing Bel Escalier from her album Les Nouvelles Fabulettes. The kingdom of heaven is like someone climbing a magical staircase and offering all she has and being given everything she needs and wants in exchange. And it seems giving is the only way to receive and the only way to retain what we have received. Let me take a minute to tell you about Irish fairy gold. Do you know what that is? Well, someday you might find yourself wandering around in a deep forest, and you might come across a fairy who, if you're lucky, will give you the gift of a bag filled with gold coins. It's a free gift, yours to keep, but there is one stipulation. The bag will stay filled with gold only if you keep giving the gold coins away. Gifts retain their value only if we retain our generosity. No hoarding of gifts or the gifts disappear. Think about it. And here's a delightful, loving song about such gifts from The Loving Spoonful called Full Measure. The full measure of your giving you don't yet understand.
That you hold in your hand.
And see, it's also picking up on that Christmas theme we all have in our minds, too. I heard them say it at Christmas, now I can say it too. The feeling of giving, it's as good as I'm getting from you. And of course, we give you this radio show itself as a gift. Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Cambridge's community radio, with your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson. The ideas, songs, and poems on our show are like Irish fairy gold. My purse is full of them, but they dissipate unless I give them away. And now you too have to give them away. How you do that is up to you. There must be many creative ways of giving to others what you have been given on Evening Under Lamplight. Our next song doesn't speak about giving gifts, but giving gifts back. Why? Because, like Apollo's gift to Cassandra, the gift came with a price, and it was the same price that Cassandra was asked to pay. The guy gives to the doll and expects the doll to give back. But this doll is not giving her body back in exchange. She's giving the gifts themselves back. And why do I call her a doll? Because the song is from the 1950 Broadway musical Guys and Dolls, and it's called Take Back Your Mink. After giving this doll a mink and a gown, the necklace, the shoes, and the hat in late 48, as I recall, one night in his apartment, he tried to remove them all. The doll seems taken by surprise. Is she pure-minded? Or shall we say innocent? Or shall we say naive? And has she been under the impression that the guy has given her these things just because he liked her? Take back your mink, she tells him. Take back your pearls. What makes you think that I'm that kind of a girl? The song is not part of the actual drama of Guys and Dolls. It's a review song sung by Adelaide, one of the characters, and it's not quite so innocent after all. As she sings it, she takes off the clothes to give back to him and so turns the song into a kind of striptease act with Adelaide and her backup chorus, the Hot Box Girls, ending up performing in corsets and stockings. The role of Adelaide was a secondary role in Guys and Dolls, but Vivian Blaine made it one of the great Broadway characters of all time. With her New York accent, and her vulnerable but true-hearted voice. The music and the lyrics were written by Frank Lesser. Now here's Adelaide with Take Back Your Mink.
Take back your pails.
take back your mink to from whence it came, and tell them to Hollanderize it for some other dame. A great phrase, Hollanderize it, but what does it mean? We can guess that it means something like dry clean it. Here's your mink coat back, get it dry cleaned for your next victim. But a little research shows that it's more complex and wittier than we had supposed. Seymour Cass wrote to the New York Times in 1992 when Guys and Dolls was being revived on Broadway. Cass knew what Hollanderize really meant. He says, "The common meaning of Hollanderize, when I worked as a furrier for my father, King of the Muskrats, in the 1940s and 50s, was to dye the cheaper, plebeian, widely worn muskrat coats to give them the look of mink. Nearly all muskrat coats were Hollanderized. Thus, what Adelaide is saying is that her coat is not mink in the first place, but muskrat. Most of the 1950 New York audience would have understood this at once. The line has no punch if it merely means to have the coat dry cleaned." So, keep that in mind next time your doll hands back the muskrat you gave her. And now it's time to move on to the Christmas gifts. First, a gift from 120 years ago. In 1891, Robert Louis Stevenson met Henry Clay Ide, who had come to Samoa as American Land Commissioner. Ide happened to mention that his daughter Annie was upset that her birthday was on Christmas Day. So Stevenson generously offered to give Annie his own birthday as a gift. He drew upon his early training in the law and drafted the following document, surely one of life's more unusual gifts, and a good example of Stevenson's playfulness, especially with children. "I, Robert Louis Stevenson, advocate of the Scots Bar, author of The Master of Ballantrae and Moral Emblems, stock civil engineer, sole owner and patentee of the palace and plantation known as Valima upon the island of Opolu, Samoa, a British subject, being in sound mind and pretty well, I thank you, in body, in consideration that Miss Annie H. Ide, daughter of H. C. Ide, in the town of St. Johnsbury, in the county of Caledonia, in the state of Vermont, United States of America, was born out of all reason upon Christmas Day, and is therefore out of all justice denied the consolation and profit of a proper birthday. And considering that I, the said Robert Louis Stevenson, having attained an age when, oh, we never mention it, and that I have now no further use for a birthday of any description, and in consideration that I have met H. C. Ide, the father of the said Annie H. Ide, and found him about as fine a land commissioner as I require, have transferred and do hereby transfer to the said Annie H. Ide all and whole my rights and privileges in the 13th day of November, formerly my birthday, now hereby and henceforth the birthday of the said Annie H. Ide, to have, hold, exercise and enjoy the same in the customary manner, by the sporting of fine raiment, eating of rich meats, and the receipt of gifts, compliments, and copies of verse, according to the manner of our ancestors. And I direct the said Annie H. Ide to add to the said name of Annie H. Ide the name Louisa, at least in private. And I charge her to use my said birthday with moderation and humanity, et tamquam bona filia familiae, the said birthday not being so young as it once was, and having carried me in a very satisfactory manner since I can remember. And in case the said Annie H. Ide shall neglect or contravene either of the above conditions, I hereby revoke the donation and transfer my rights in the said birthday to the President of the United States of America for the time being. In witness whereof, I have hereto set my hand and seal this 19th day of June in the year of grace 1891. Robert Louis Stevenson." Well, that wasn't exactly a Christmas gift, was it? More like a reversed Christmas gift. And though my birthday, too, falls on December 25th, I'm quite pleased with it and wouldn't exchange it even for November 13th, thanks. We follow this generous gift, however, with some, well, some sort of nasty pieces about Christmas gifts. First, the Christmas list. Here's a version of that ritual as interpreted by Louis Barabbas in the Bedlam Six. First, we get Louis's voice villainously projected from the back of his throat, wildly, impatient, not quite the Father Christmas Santa Claus we'd expect, more like a drunken Scrooge with a white beard and a red suit. Well, I've been writing my list, and now I'm checking it twice, kicking the snow from off my boots, scraping back the ice. Sleet on the trees is like a mockery of blossom. Many children have been bad this year, but I have forgotten. Ho, ho, ho. Don't wish to buy a place and don't try to understand. Don't stay up, cause I won't come down. Believe in me, children, while you can, cause the day will come when I'm not around. Tonight I'm getting merry, I'll be knocking back the sherry, I'll be dancing on the rooftop, shaking my belly, singing ho, ho, ho. And then Allison comes in between Louis's verses, the voice of the innocent child, making the list with all the energy that's in me, and longing to escape up in the sky with Santa. I want to see the world, but I'm not allowed, she says. Well, I too wouldn't allow her to go up there with that macabre mythic figure on the roof. She can write a list of what she wants for presents, but, well, don't hope too much, kid. Poor kid. As for the music, I don't know what moves me most, the elegance of the sound or the agility and wit with which that sound is produced.
Off my boots, scraping back the ice. The sleet on my trees is like a mockery of blossom. Plenty of children been bad this year, but I have forgotten. Oh, ho, ho, ho. Ho, 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 ho. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, 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 ho.
I've been writing my list and I've sent it up the chimney. I made my Christmas wish with all the energy that's in me.
And don't try to understand. Don't stay up, cause I won't come down. Believe in me, oh children, while you can, cause the day will come when I'm not around.
Ideas of you rising up from my head, like the antlers on a reindeer's brow. Won't you take me up on a ride on the flying sled? I long to see the world, but I'm not allowed.
Oh,
Louis Barabbas with the Bedlam Six and writing my list. Find out more about this fine group at www.louisbarabbas.com. Listening to this song, do we want to sit in expectation of Christmas gifts or just cringe in the corner and hope that Father Christmas will avoid us and leave us alone? But worse than that is Mrs. Thatcher's Christmas gift. Mrs. Thatcher's Christmas Gifts Policy. This is a private eye sketch from 1980, just a year into Margaret Thatcher's reign, with Pamela Stevenson, soon to be celebrated on Not the 9 o'clock News, playing Margaret Thatcher.
I'd like to take this opportunity to say a few Christmas words to all the young children who are expecting presents. Now, up till now, I know these gifts have been given to you free of charge, but good heavens, isn't it about time young people got a grip on reality and realized that we can't expect to jolly well get everything for nothing? So what we're going to do in future is ask all of you to pay for your presents at the market rate. Goodness, it's not much to ask, and I think you'll find you appreciate a present much more when you've paid out hard cash. Shut up, Carol!
See, we mustn't forget what that ruthless nanny voice was like. Ruthless, of course, only for our own good. We'll like things better that way, take her word for it. And it doesn't sound like any voices today, does it? Well, now for our Kinks Christmas song. In previous years at Christmas, I have played this on the show, but this year, our theme of gifts seems especially apt for the song Father Christmas. Although it was written in 1977, a few years before Mrs. Thatcher's Christmas gifts policy, it reflects that same state of the country, the dispossessed poor, whose needs are ignored by the unseeing rich and powerful. What kind of Christmas song would be appropriate for the feeling of despair in 1977? How about a song about the time Father Christmas was mugged by a gang of kids? And with the twist that the kids reject all his toys and just want his money. Don't give me gifts that you think I want. Let me just take money and, since you have no idea about me, let me buy what I want to have. Or as the song says, Father Christmas, give us some money. Don't mess around with these silly toys. We'll beat you up if you don't hand it over. We want your bread, so don't make us annoyed. Give all the toys to the little rich boys. And then a kind of anti-Christmas wish list. Don't give my brother a Steve Austin outfit. A what? A Steve Austin outfit? Don't tell me you don't remember Steve Austin, the $6 million bionic man. Don't give my brother a Steve Austin outfit. Don't give my sister a cuddly toy. We don't want a jigsaw or Monopoly money. We only want the real McCoy. And then the kink in the song, with a shift in tone and a different kind of gift. But give my daddy a job, 'cause he needs one. He's got lots of mouths to feed. This mugging takes place in a much larger economic context, and at least these kids, rough and punky as they are, at least they understand where the real need is. And then the casual line almost thrown away, but if you've got one, I'll have a machine gun so I can scare all the kids on the street. It's like he's asking for some sweeties at the sweet shop. So polite all of a sudden. If you've got one, I'll have a machine gun. And then the final shift. Surely not the nasty kids speaking now, but Ray Davis himself, breaking into the song, casting a wry glance at us and wishing us a merry, merry Christmas, and reminding us to remember those who got nothing when we're drinking down our wine. I think the song takes on an added significance this year, not just because of the riots in August, a kind of mass manifestation of this small act of mugging Father Christmas out of helpless desperation, but also because of all the Occupy movements, where people all over are refusing the gifts the big powers hand out to them and demand a fairer share of the money as the gift that will have true meaning. Only we can't picture the Occupy people mugging Father Christmas. Well, here's the song. Don't let the heavy guitar and manic drums scare you after the sweet Christmas bells opening the track. Not your usual Christmas song, is it? And it's a bit boisterous for the ending of Evening Under Lamplight. I'd better put on my nice soothing voice to help you relax and settle down after that. Yes, that was The Kinks from 1977 with the song Father Christmas. As Frank Zappa sang, it can't happen here. Oh no? Oops. We better not start getting too edgy. It's the end of the show and we might fall off the edge. So let's just close this Evening Under Lamplight with, as usual, my warm wishes to you. And may all good gifts around us in this season and throughout the year echo the Elgin song so that we, delighted, can say heaven must have sent them into our lives. A full measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over. Keep in touch via Lamplight at Cambridge105.fm and hear the archives at momentsunderlamplight.com. And come back to Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge for our next Evening Under Lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, going out on New Year's Day. Now here's Anne Page to close with Bach's Es ist das Heil uns kommen her. It's played on the organ of Trinity College Chapel.